Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man, and I would like to welcome you to my home. Thank you for being here. It means a lot to me. This show is an outlet for me, first of all. And second of all, it is a tremendous cry or a plea to try to help or to set something down and my attempt to make something for you. I hope you see that. This is a personal project and this is a social community project. I'm hoping that love and compassion and me speaking about these things through the context of my own subjective opinion can hopefully be endearing enough to you to inspire you to want to be curious and to want to be compassionate towards others. And by love, I mean some vague sense of love, some unconditional love, not an inspired conditional love, not Romeo and Juliet. I see love in the balance of nature, and I see love in the remarkability of chance and my opportunity to be here, the opportunity for all life to be here. Because it seems like it could just be some sort of accident, or it could all be on purpose. And either way, that's just fucking magnificent to me. And by curiosity, I mean the will and want to desire some meaning system, even if it's anti-meaning. There's nihilism and extreme skepticism, and then there's fundamental immaterialists. There is so many ways to be, and it could be your own way to be, which is something that I feel that I'm doing here. I was speaking with a friend earlier this week about how I felt that for myself, in the most individualistic, specific way possible, I feel that for the past 2 years, I have been trying very hard to craft a philosophy for myself, you know? And I sat down with myself after some extreme moment and questioned my purpose, and I questioned what life was and what I had been experiencing up to that point. And I realized that if I didn't have some sort of faith for myself, and this isn't the Catholic faith or any sort of religious or organizational faith, but if I didn't have some sort of faith in myself and my existence, you know, and from there I started looking, and I started looking to the closest thing available, which was my fellow humans and my humanity that I always felt so disparaged and separate from. And I put all of my efforts towards looking at texts and people's words that resonated with me. And I looked towards people that seemed to be doing something right or seemed to be happy. And sometimes I went the exact opposite way in an effort to get a bit of contrast to help see more clear, if that makes sense. But I started crafting and I started building and I started looking. And it started with that basic curiosity, because I wanted badly to share the excitement that I felt when I admired and found something interesting in my world. It's a very fortunate experience. I'm so grateful to have it. But anyways, that's why I'm here. That's my purpose reset again. I always intend to use the beginning of this show to constantly remind myself what I'm doing here. What are you doing here? Are you curious? Do you feel compassionate or do you feel rigid in life? Do you feel hardened like a callus that builds resistance to be able to withstand more? Insert here. Do you wish you had more opportunities to feel compassionate towards others? It's really nice to see. Tonight, I went and saw a friend and did art and listened to his music and gave him my time fully because I cared. And then upon arriving home, my son saw a bunch of children playing outside. And most nights, Monday through Friday, even during the summertime, he is unfortunate enough to have to wake up very early with me because I have to work a morning schedule. And he's been institutionalized for the vast majority of his life during these time periods, you know, existing in daycares or school. And so whilst other kids have the summer freedom and maybe the flexibility of having young, older siblings available to watch them while their parents leave, he hears these kids playing outside a lot, and he has to go to bed at 7:30, and I'm sure that that builds a lot of jealousy and resentment towards me and confusion as to why that happens. He even questioned me last night as to why other kids were playing, and he asked all these questions point blank, which I'm sure has been sitting there underneath the surface in his little conscious for quite some time. So we get home and he sees all these kids, and it's a perfect time for him to go out. And so I offer him to go play, and he takes it up very quickly and runs out, and at first is quite awkward, and I wonder why. You know, I was always very awkward as a child too, and with me as a sole benefactor, and he has to sponge up some of my awkwardness, and you could see it, and he didn't know exactly how to place himself into the midst of all these crazy interactions available. So I watch him for about 10 to 15 minutes above the pages of my book while he goes and picks up trash, which is kind of weird. And then he comes up to me and he says, "Dad, why are all these people ruining the planet?" And then he goes back to picking up more trash. A very eco-conscious little man. The other day, while throwing away trash, you know, he wanted to get something out of the trash. And I was like, "Nah, dude, that's somebody else's trash. We can't touch that. That's unsanitary, you know." And he goes off on the spiel, you know, "Reduce, reuse, recycle, Dad. We got to save the planet." And I know it's what they're being taught, but to see him passionate about it makes me feel good. No matter what your opinion is on that, you know, he's passionate about it. And he's 7, and that's amazing. So after picking up trash for a while, he finds this girl with skates. She's like walking through the grass because I think she's having difficulties performing her skating functions. And so she's pretty awkward too, is my guess. And they hit it off at somehow. I don't remember that spontaneous moment, and I'd really like to pay attention and watch it next time. But all of a sudden they're just playing. And as soon as they start playing, other kids start grouping around them because I think they perceive the fun that these two were having. And one of Odin's things that he always does is he likes to give things, and I wonder why. I love giving things too. My favorite thing to give people is books. But he would give the shirt off of his own back, and it gets ridiculous because he starts giving away my shit, like my food. And so he goes in and grabs 2 Kool-Aids for the rollerblade girl, and one of their followers that they have collected at this point. And it's just, he didn't even think about it. He just immediately went inside. She was, one of the girls was like, I'm thirsty. And he's like, okay, I'll go get you a drink. And he immediately goes and gets them his favorite thing, or his favorite drink, at least his drink, you know. They go back to playing. And then a while later, another kid comes in, and she's a little weird and a little rude, and ends up hurting one of the other little girls with a jump rope by wrapping it around her face. And I watched the whole thing happen, and then all the kids kind of ganged up against her, but Odin was really quiet, you know. And then the girl who had done the damage immediately tried to recompense and was like, I'm sorry, it was an accident. And then you could see the tide growing with the multitude, the group, which was 3-on-1 at this point. But Odin was still quiet, but he was with his two friends at this point, and I think he felt that weird tension. And what I found strange was approximately like 3-ish minutes later, but once everybody had calmed down, he went back in the house and got another Kool-Aid for the girl who had made the accident and actually done damage. And this was quite strange. And I think that it was because he had accidentally hurt people's feelings, and physically accidentally hurt people through not managing his own emotional control. And I think he felt an empathy for this girl, and that's why he wanted to reach out and do this act of kindness. And all of this happened within his own head and the machinations of his own thoughts, and had enough time scale that he waited until it wouldn't look awkward before he did what he wanted to do. And I think it was a noble act. And it was really cool to watch, to be honest. He has been amazing me over these past couple weeks, and I've seen so much growth. And I hope that if you have a child, and if you're struggling with your own relationship with your child, like I have had difficulties maintaining mine with my own, you know, I hope that you know that there is a light at the end of the tunnel. Either it might even be an adulthood in the long game, but there are moments of beauty that our children show us, and I see tremendous lessons taught here to myself by watching him. In my frustrations and my tensions, when I try to force him unduly, he is doing tremendous work within his own mind where I can no longer interfere or stray. And the harder I push him, the more I will not be allowed within his own inner sanctum and kingdom. And that's the last thing that I want, to be fair. You see, this trip of parenting is fantastic and confounding. And I'm so grateful to have all of these opportunities to learn. And I don't think that it's just with kids. I think that pet owners can have the ability to pour their love. I think it really does come back to this love and this unconditional love. And even though parenting is a highly conditioned love, I think it's the perfect opportunity to learn how to love unconditionally within those circumstances, if that makes any sense. And by conditioned, I mean it's heavily certain that you have to take care of your children, at least in a society like mine, where I could go to jail from neglect. And not to say that I would ever like to avoid neglect. I don't neglect, and I don't think anybody should, but it's a punishable offense within the structural values, you see. I'd like to go back to an old episode I did a while ago, which was Nietzsche's The Camel, which I'm not going to retell the story because I told it from my heart in the way that I wanted to tell it in that moment, and it would bastardize it just to retell it. You know, I wasn't telling Nietzsche's camel, I was telling my version of Nietzsche's camel, you know. And that's what happens within any sort of performance-based, especially vocal performances, I'm starting to realize. If I'm not reading from a script, you know, I need to be very careful with how I portray something. And one of the details that I missed within the camel, which, short synopsis, not the whole story, within the metamorphosis, you have the camel, which people are born as, we accept struggle. And then from struggle, we deny as the lion. And then from the lion, we learn to accept and to create from the child. One of the pieces in the whole tale from Thus Spoke Zarathustra is that the lion has to confront this entity, which is the dragon of value. And upon the dragon's scales are like a bajillion golden impenetrable scales. And each scale is a value that has been encumbered by society and history and whatever you belong to within your group community context over this immense time period. We have values that are subjective and that we can't even remember that we're influenced by, you know. There's a lot of things that we don't even know that we don't know, especially about why we act the way we act and why we don't do something sometimes. So the dragon has on all these scales the values, and each value starts with thou shalt. And so the lion doesn't really refuse, but it is an act of refusal because the lion says, I will. So thou shalt not do this. Thou shalt not do that. Thou shalt not. Thou shalt. And then the lion says, I will do this. And in the case of an affirmation, I will not do that. You know, but it is a refusal. But I didn't really look at it subliminally or subtly enough. There's the right word. I didn't look at it with a subtle take the first time. And when I was rereading it this time, I really saw that, you know. And the child, the act of creation that we witness, is because the child's not influenced by the burden, and the child isn't influenced by the historical context and Carl Jung's subconscious that is constantly fighting in the background of our direct awareness. The child is actively creating and just experiencing. And what's amazing is that we have the capacity right now to head that direction towards just being fully aware and present. And I find that amazing. It fills me with hope that in any present moment, even when I've decided I might be uncomfortable, you know, no storm holds a gale wind forever. And no chemical storm within me can ever hold me under that uncomfortable sway forever. And I can learn a lot even in those little pitfalls of moments that are inherently suckered through life. And God help us, I'm so grateful they're there because they make me realize how lucky I am everywhere. So those are just some things I've been thinking about. Yeah. What really jump-started a lot of my thoughts, and especially my positivity about my son of recent, was a task that I was given in one of Odin's therapy sessions, where I have to do kind of like a homework of sorts, where most of the time I'll just log what's called PCIT time. So I'm doing this type of therapy called PCIT, which is parent-child interaction therapy. And what they do is they put like a headphone in your ear. And so while you're playing with your kid for like 45 minutes to an hour, you have direction and advice, and then they log certain key things that you're supposed to be doing. Like reflecting the child is one of those things. And positive praise is another one of those things. Labeled praise, which is actively pointing the praise at something the kid is doing, which is something I'm terrible at. And all these things really do add up, I'm starting to notice, in the trust and in the ability to talk with the kid. Odin's been a lot more open with me. And I do really think a lot of that has to do with a lot of the different therapies we're doing, and this therapy in particular. And so usually I have to log how much time I do every day and what and why. And like one of the specific things is at the beginning, you always structure it as this is complete open free time and the kid is the captain. So the kid directs the play and you kind of follow. And this really puts a lot of power and choice and respect in the kid's hands. And that's invaluable. And so last week, instead of that homework, I was told to just watch Odin's, watch what he did. And whenever he did something positive or did something that I liked or did something that I noticed that I liked, I was to write it down and journal about it. And immediately, as soon as I heard the idea, my brain immediately knew how delicious of a nectar of a gift this was that I was given, because this was a perfect exercise. And it didn't even have to be for the homework for the therapy. Just to have the exercise in my head, I immediately started wanting to look at and find the positive things. And as soon as I started looking for positive things, I started noticing more of them. And as soon as I started noticing more positive things, he started acting more positively. And perhaps that was because subconsciously he could feel how I felt about him. And the whole time he might have just been reflecting back the label that I'd already given him. You see? There's this concept that I remember from some sociology classes that I took called The Looking Glass Self by this dude named Cooley, where basically we all get our self-concept based off of what we think other people think about us. But when we're making a judgment call about how we think other people think, which we can never do, we can never step inside somebody else's mind. So it's all a fragment of our own mind. And then we're basing our own self-concept off of an imaginary one that we also created. And neither of any of that shit exists in reality, you know. But simply feeling better about people, I think, makes us treat them better. And that makes the whole thing work better. And then they'd start treating themselves better. And we start removing ourselves from a toxic environment. And it has really been working. So if there's anything in your life that you feel strongly negatively towards, or you've been struggling with, and it might not even be a person, it might be a behavior or a habit or something, you know, like perhaps look at that segment of your life and start noticing the good things, or if it's in fact like a pain in your life. And I went down the habitude earlier, so like say like addiction or something, you know, but maybe look at the positive things in your life that don't have to do with that hell pit, you know, and that misery that you do feel in this moment. Because there are points of life that are very heavy and are hard to carry, you know. But even then, there's always little glimpses of moments and memories of happiness, and they do come again. This is a cyclical life and a cyclical nature that we happen to find ourselves in. But yeah, so I'm going to do a little bit of quotes, and then I'm going to go on to Odin and see what he has to think. I really hope you enjoyed this, or if it was boring, you at least related to some of it. I truly care about you, and that's why I make this. I'm trying to help. And so I hope through my stories, we can find some common ground. My email address is very available, and we can have a discourse in written format. And if you have strong disagreements with anything I've said, I'd like to hear about that too. I think it's very crucial, and I'll put any disagreement that you have, you know, I'll read it publicly on the show, and I'll call myself out on anything. If I get any dates wrong, if I ever say a word wrong, you know, we can totally make this a better program. I have intentions to increase the audio quality and to figure out the technological stuff and the editing better too. I had a wonderful time last week with Tony, but I do know that the sound quality was a little hard, and I had issues listening to it in the car because I didn't record it loud enough. So, but like I said, I'm trying to make this better too. And I do realize that I and this show and we and this world are a work in progress, and I care heavily about this. And so that's why, you know, you're important. You're very important. I'm grateful that you woke up this morning and that you're breathing. You know, you are an amazing spirit and an amazing human being, and I love you, and I hope that you love yourself too. So I'm going to start off with some Nietzsche. Yep, and I'm going to do this whole little section, so this might take a couple minutes, like approximately 2 to 3 minutes. So if you get bored by somebody reading from a book, you know, just skip through this and you can listen to my kid. You can skip through any part, honestly. That's the really cool thing about having podcasting as a platform, is that you can literally just press that 30 second through anything. Luckily, I'm never going to monetize this, so you're never going to have to listen to those shitty ads. So yeah. This section is called On the Teachers of Virtue. And I found it very sarcastic and tongue-in-cheek, personally. Here goes. A sage was praised to Zarathustra for knowing how to speak well of sleep and of virtue. He was said to be honored and rewarded highly for this, and all the youths were said to be sitting at his feet. To him Zarathustra went, and he sat at his feet with all the youths, and thus spoke the sage. Honor sleep, and be bashful before it, that first of all, and avoid all who sleep badly and stay awake at night. Even the thief is bashful before sleep. He always steals silently through the night. Shameless, however, is the watchman of the night. Shamelessly he carries his horn. Sleeping is no mean art. For its sake, one must stay awake all day. 10 times a day you must overcome yourself. That makes you good and tired and is opium for the soul. 10 times you must reconcile yourself again with yourself, for overcoming is bitterness. And the unreconciled sleep badly. 10 truths a day you must find, else you will be seeking truth by night, and your soul will remain hungry. 10 times a day you must laugh and be cheerful, else you will be disturbed at night by your stomach, this father of gloom. Few know it, but one must have all the virtues to sleep well. Shall I bear false witness? Shall I commit adultery? Shall I covet my neighbor's maid? All that would go ill with good sleep. And even if one has all the virtues, there's one further thing one must know. To send even the virtues to sleep at the right time, lest they quarrel with each other, the fair little women, about you, child of misfortune, peace with God and the neighbor. That is what good sleep demands, and peace even with the neighbor's devil, else he will haunt you at night. Honor the magistrates and obey them, even the crooked magistrates. Good sleep demands it. It is my fault that power likes to walk on crooked legs. I shall call him the best shepherd who leads his sheep to the greenest pasture. That goes well with good sleep. I do not want many honors or great jewels. That inflames the spleen. But one sleeps badly without a good name and a little jewel. A little company is more welcome to me than evil company, but they must go and come at the right time. That goes well with good sleep. Much too do I like the poor in spirit. They promote sleep. Blessed are they, especially if one always tells them that they are right. Thus passes the day of the virtuous. And when night comes, I guard well against sleep, for sleep, who is the master of the virtue, does not want to be called. Instead, I think about what I have done and thought during the day. Chewing the cud, I ask myself, patient as a cow, well, what were your 10 overcomings, and what were your 10 reconciliations, and the 10 truths and the 10 laughters with which your heart edified itself? Weighing such matters and rocked by 40 thoughts, I am suddenly overcome by sleep, the uncalled, the master of the virtues. Sleep knocks at my eyes, and they become heavy. Sleep touches my mouth, it stays open. Verily, on soft soul, he comes to me, the dearest of thieves, and steals my thoughts. Stupid I stand, like the chair here, but not for long do I stand like this. Soon I lie. When Zarathustra heard the sage speak thus, he laughed in his heart, for an insight had come to him, and thus he spoke to his heart. This sage with his 40 thoughts is a fool, but I believe that he knows well how to sleep. Happy is he that even lives near this sage. Such sleep is contagious. Contagious even through a thick wall. There is magic even in his chair, and it is not in vain that the youths sit before this preacher of virtue. His wisdom is to wake in order to sleep well. And verily, if life had no sense, and I had to choose nonsense, then I too should consider this the most sensible nonsense. Now I consider clearly what was once sought above all when teachers of virtue were sought. Good sleep was sought, and opiate virtues for it. For all these much praised sages who were teachers of virtue, wisdom was the sleep without dreams. They knew no better meaning of life. Today, too, there may still be a few like this preacher of virtue, and not all so honest. But their time is up, and not for long will they stand like this. Soon they will lie. Blessed are the sleepy ones, for they shall soon drop off. Thus spoke Zarathustra. So, this is a hard one because I know a lot of people who struggle with sleep. And what's funny is that Nietzsche reputedly struggled with sleep. He was remarked to have taken like 50 grams of this drug called chloral hydrate, which is ridiculously toxic, and was like suffering seizures because of it. And then had even worse insomnia too, because he was doing anything to drug himself into sleep. And yet even here, he's criticizing those who would rather sleep but then be alive, I think. And if virtue is just sleeping and not having existence and not having anything while we're here, you know, there is a beyond, there is a between, there is an after, but we're here right now, you know. And it's important to have good sleeping patterns, but the old idiom, sleep is a virtue. Well, thank you for listening. Let's go see what Odin has to say.
Hello, people. Welcome to the Gingerbread Man and the Odin Show.
And the Odin Show. I love it.
Yeah, I just changed my name into Odin.
You can change it as many times as you want.
Yep.
That's pretty cool. I've had a really good day with you today.
I had a really good day with you.
What was your favorite part about today?
Playing.
Playing what?
With you.
Aw, doesn't matter what. You're sweet. You know that? I love you, dude. So, tell me something you learned this week.
I learned nothing.
You didn't learn anything?
Mm-hmm.
Did you learn any people skills or how to make friends?
Mm-hmm. Oh. I learned how to make friends.
Okay, tell me more about that.
I'm not going to tell you.
You want to tell me about it next week?
It's about trusting yourself and making a friend.
Oh, that is invaluable. That is wonderful advice. So you have to trust yourself first?
Mm-hmm. Hmm. If they're mean.
Even if they're mean?
Mm.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, I love you. Thank you for being here with me today. What are you doing? You're so weird. You want to say bye?
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.